This is the Transmission Times End of Year Special, Part 1.
When the virus was first starting to spread, I heard about it just a couple days before I went to my sister's baby shower. She was pretty heavily pregnant by that point. And I remember sitting around with the other guests, just kind of talking casually about it. And this was in New York City, actually. And then after the baby shower, I made plans to come to my nephew's birth, and I left. And just a couple weeks later, everything started happening. I remember talking to my sister on the phone, and she was 40 weeks at that point, and she said that her husband had a fever. And it wasn't getting better. And that was the moment where I just went, oh my God, this is not just somewhere else. This is here. This is my family. And her husband did. He got COVID. She didn't get sick, but she went into labor while he was still sick. And she wasn't able to deliver with any family around. And it was just a surreal moment where we realized that this is now a part of our story. And we can't go back.
I work in a hospital, so I was coming into contact with COVID a lot, and when we were in the peak of the pandemic, I would sometimes have periods where I would just be suddenly like gripped by really powerful anxiety that I was going to die from this virus. And I can feel it now as I remember. Always in those moments was just the most unbearable pain that I might leave my son and that I just wouldn't have seen anywhere near enough of his life.
We remember early on the day that the first freezer trailers were delivered to each hospital. You began to see it. You began to see these ramps being set up outside the hospital so that they could wheel bodies up into the freezer trailers. One of the most astonishing sights we would ever see is over by Industry City, which was the staging ground for all these trailers. And when we actually got a peek behind the curtain there, which was pretty much an enclosed fence of a very large area, I'm going to say probably, I don't know, 10-acre site, maybe more. It was wall-to-wall freezer trailers, wall-to-wall. And then we got a closer look to get a look at the signs. And it was, you know, one sign was funeral directors to the left, medical examiner this way, or hearses this way. You know, we'd always remind each other that this could be us. It could be us.
Our family is surviving on our savings, which I'm really, really grateful that we went into this time with some savings. But honestly, mostly we're surviving on the generosity of others right now. And it's this very weird thing about this time that on the one hand, it feels some days excruciatingly hard, and then other days, like, so beautiful. The generosity and kindness and the care of people, not just who know us, but strangers even who've reached out sometimes. So that has been incredible, and it's made me really question a lot of the things that we prioritize before. I mean, I think we all know, we've all been told that money doesn't buy happiness. But it's very strange to actually be in this situation where money is the thing that is not in a large supply here. And I felt more contented and happier during this time than I have in a really, really long time.
I'm a musician, a guitarist, songwriter, and I perform with my husband, Joe. We've spent our life making music and touring 40,000, 50,000 miles on our car a year, you know, playing 3 and 4 shows a week down to nothing. So it's been devastating. It's economically and emotionally, and it's really been hard.
That was a big clap out that was organised for the National Health Service workers as a way of saying thank you for all that they do for looking after people with coronavirus. And everyone out on the street was just clapping, as my children you can hear in the background, for the doctors and the nurses and the paramedics and all the people working in hospitals that are looking after people that are sick as part of our National Health Service in the UK.
A third of the staff on my ward are off sick, probably with COVID-19. So I think my main hope is for PPE. So I really hope that all the doctors and nurses get to protect themselves at work.
I work in a casino in a blackjack pit, which is probably the most toxic place you could be during a pandemic. You just don't want to be in a place where everybody's facing you and breathing and coughing in your direction, and all those germs are riding on a little magic carpet of smoke, and you really just don't want to be there. It's very nerve-wracking when you know that there's a bad bug going around. But I got the word from my coworkers that one of our regular players killed his 10-year-old son and then committed suicide a couple days ago. And this is just tragic. He'd been going through a terrible divorce. He'd lost his business about a year before that. And I think maybe it was just the pressures of all of this. He probably lost his job again. So the first casualty that I am in some way personally connected with was not related to the virus, but to the deaths of distress that come from this kind of an event.
The lockdown has sent our poor daughter completely loopy. We think she's on the autistic spectrum, and school was really important for her, a really big anchor in her life. We used to do this thing at the dinner table where everyone would say one good thing that had happened to them during the day, and every time it came to her, she always said school. Her anxiety around food and taking medicines and things has become extreme. She'll reject food if something that we can't even see has happened to it, like her finger has touched the outside of a bowl that contains rice, for example. She won't eat it. She won't eat the rice. She sees meat in the pan and she thinks a part of the meat looks green, which obviously it doesn't, and then she won't eat the meat. I didn't really question that the lockdown was necessary and was, on balance, a good thing. And I am not at all convinced anymore that the gains in terms of not overloading medical systems and that kind of thing are worth the pains that If I watched the news, I assume I wouldn't see on the news, really. You don't necessarily see this kind of stress, this kind of distress. Unless you live in it, and then you can't get away from it. And I don't... personally... ugh, I don't know. I'd like to say it's not worth it. I guess it's hypothetical because we don't know what would have happened if the virus had been allowed to run its course freely. But my heart says this ain't worth it. My heart says stop.
I got to Skype with my sister this week. That might sound like a really basic thing, but it's not that simple because my sister lives 100 plus miles away by herself in a supported apartment, and she has an intellectual disability. So up until this week, she didn't have a computer because she's not very good at taking care of things. So trying to video chat has been a goal for a few weeks now between my parents and me, and we finally did it, and it works, and it took a lot of effort, and it was not trivial. I think that's the big event of the week, and what I want to remember is just seeing my sister's face and hoping that I get to see it for a long time to come.
Under 6 weeks ago, 6 weeks this coming Monday, things were really starting to ramp up, and my husband and I made a plan to have me stay with my mom, and so we were going to just look at it week to week. The big reason behind that was because at the time I was 6 weeks pregnant, and he is an essential worker, and I haven't seen him since then, except twice through the window. You know, as people think about and people talk about and they ask about, like, you know, what are you most excited about doing when this is over? And, like, what are you looking forward to? It's like, I feel like it's just him. Yeah. Just him.
It's close to midnight. I've been going back and forth between appalled and shocked at the general thought process of the whole world right now. They're telling hundreds of millions of people not to work, and that's fine for people who have plenty of money and food and don't really worry about it. I'm hearing all these comments by people who are telling everyone to stay in and don't think about money. And people who are saying that are the people who are not having to worry about it.
I just noticed a live video on YouTube of a protest in Ohio against the lockdown. People are seeing the numbers, and the numbers don't make sense to them. And it's not the numbers are not as high as they think they should be, and you can say it's because of the social distancing. It's the percentage of people staying home and recuperating on their own, and the number of deaths don't add up to what we were told it was going to be.
The lives that are going to be lost, people in other countries, people who normally would be serving others, people who would normally be donating to others, people who would normally be at least making other people happier so that they can serve others. This is the most devastating event I can imagine happening There's no engine that has created such wonderful lives for all of us in terms of peace, in terms of safety, than the potential that's harnessed in people desiring to work and serve each other and get paid.
My son worked in a restaurant, and they were all laid off immediately, as soon as they shut down the city. And they all applied for unemployment, and he told me that two of the guys that he knows were denied unemployment. He hasn't heard anything, and it's been 3 weeks. So he's on the lower rung economically and completely broke and has nothing coming in and no idea when anything is going to come in. His roommate is still working, and his roommate is getting irritated because he hasn't been able to get another job. So it's creating a little strife in their house. He could lose his roommate situation and then have no place to live.
My almost 21-year-old son was living in New York City for the majority of the pandemic. And I would say my worst moment was when he called me at midnight, probably back when the numbers were the highest in the city. And he said, "Mom, I'm going for a walk. I have my mask on, but I'm having a panic attack." And he asked me to pray for him. In a way, it was one of my best moments because it was a window that he let me in to be able to comfort him and to encourage him. I want to remember that connection because as he's come home and he's distancing from us, not just physically, but emotionally, I want to remember that he does know that he can reach out to us when he's really troubled. And I want to hold that treasure in my heart for the times that he seems very, very distant.
Everybody ready?
Light candle.
Yep.
Don't set anything on fire.
So this is my 10th birthday. We have to do that weird isolating thing.
Happy birthday to you.
I got to see my friend Zoe outside. And we got to pick up her little chicks. They were really cute. Little fuzzballs that peeped.
Happy birthday to you.
Oh, I did get flowers. It's the first person I've ever gotten flowers. They even had a helium balloon attached.
My daughter goes back to school next week, and all the parents have gathered together talking about, let's make sure we're all wearing our masks all the time. And it's not done without great cost. What cost? I don't think we know yet. You know, there's some talk about the oxygen and how well we breathe and blocking our noses from being able to breathe the way that we're supposed to breathe. And I just know our bodies are not meant to be covered in masks, especially children. I have a 4-year-old, and she's going back to this school, and they showed a video about how the new world is going to be. And you get there, you arrive, and before they get out of their car, they've got to put on their masks to cover their faces. And they take their temperature, and they go into school, and they're separated from their peers with plexiglass, and they're constantly using chemicals to wipe things down and clean things off, and the exposure to the chemicals. And they're not allowed to touch each other. They're not allowed to get up and interact. And I'm like, this is no life for a child. And I'm sending my baby, the most precious thing in my world, into this new world, doused with fear.
One thing that's kind of been on my mind is, I was wondering how many people will develop an OCD regarding cleanliness and disinfection, because I might be one of them. Not in my wildest dreams would I consider that I will focus so much on, have I disinfected the soles of my shoes enough? I'm afraid that after all this ends, no matter how much time it will be before things will go back to the so-called normal, I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to look at the doorknob the same way I did before. My boyfriend, he's way more relaxed and he doesn't think about all of this. He just follows my lead. And I'm very grateful that he does, because it's helpful not to have to try and convince him that we need to do all these steps for my sanity.
April 16th, Bramley near Basingstoke in Hampshire, UK. It's quite interesting how life has altered. I can't say it's changed particularly, because life is just going on. As I'm recording this now, I'm looking at a hedge. The whole hedge is alive with insects and birds that I've never even noticed before. It's been absolutely wonderful to watch. And the sky is as clear as it could possibly be. It's absolutely beautiful. You might hear a lorry going past now. Although I live on the outskirts of a town, it's called a village. The road outside is quite busy, as there are loads of delivery trucks going past all the time.
It was pretty eerie the first couple of days of going on my walk with my sister-in-law, and you know, you see somebody and you semi-freak out a little bit when you see them walking towards you. You think, okay, who's gonna move to the road? Is it us? Is it them? And then finding yourself like really kind of judgy in a way to people who don't move and are super close to you, and you think, excuse me, that's not 2 meters.
After driving across the country, so much of what I feel right now is just this kind of sad rage. I feel like I want to print on my mask, like, I come from the future, because we were in rural Montana and this guy on his motorcycle yelled at me as I was loading the car, and he was like, "You really still wearing a mask?" And I could tell he was being friendly, just kind of just jokingly giving me a hard time. And I stopped and I told him why I was. I said my sisters had COVID in New York, and many people I know, people my age in their 20s and 30s, I know them, they're really sick. Some people are on ventilators, you know. I don't want this. I don't want to bring it to anyone I love. And he really listened, and we talked, and he, you know, pulls up his bandana. He's not wearing a mask, but has a bandana on his head, and tells me that he works in the ER there in this tiny town in eastern Montana. And he's pretty sure it's overhyped, but he's listening. And so I just talked to him, and then he's like, "Well, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts. I'm gonna go think about this, talk to the doctors." He revs up and leaves on the motorcycle. And it feels like the oldest kind of story, right? An outsider comes in from the town. I was a risk to this guy, right? Like, I didn't wanna be traveling. I was wearing a mask to protect him, and also because it felt like, you know, I was from a version of the future that my sister talks about in New York, where there's sirens all night. Like, how do I project that into this quiet little mosquito-ridden sunset town?
What's been the hardest part of this pandemic for you?
The mask. The mask. It's just like, it drives me crazy. But I'm going to be real honest. Mm-hmm. I have not let it hinder me at all. Because if you stop and let that take over, it wins. Mm-hmm. And I'm a fighter.
There's been so many arguments online about masks. And I see memes about, "I'm wearing a mask for you," or, "Can't you wear a mask to be compassionate?" And then I see the opposite of that. I see memes about not silencing yourself or covering up your face or things like that. And then on friends' posts, I read conversations about people having somebody come and yell at them in the store because they're not wearing a mask, or people getting yelled at because they are wearing a mask. And I finally just made this post and I said, you know, we're focusing on each other and making each other enemies over things like wearing a mask. And we should stop pointing at each other and turn shoulder to shoulder and point at Washington and demand to know what they're doing. Because we have to stand together. This is the old united we stand, divided we fall thing.
My primary relationship with people is now two-dimensional and flat. It takes place on laptop screen, iPhone via talk or text, and email. When I think about the friends and people in my family I keep in touch with virtually, I envision them differently than I did before the pandemic. They've receded in a strange way, faded, become a special COVID version of ghosts. Then there's the undertow, a unique COVID tension that has become both familiar and a thing I'm often in denial about. This part of this new life has not lessened in intensity. In some ways, it continues to grow, strengthen, as the political, social, financial, and health situation in the world outside my confinement worsens. It gnaws away at me, wears me, and then wears me down, and I have a day, or part of a day, when I struggle, find little meaning, and realize how profound the pandemic is, how challenging, how many layers it has, brutal strength, even for those of us who are clear of the actual virus. This dark undertow is also the virus, and as we try hard to keep above the water, live as well and as healthy and safe as possible, our psychological immune systems are challenged.
When this all first started, you know, and we all thought it would be a couple weeks or maybe a month, and thought, oh yeah, we'll jump right back into, you know, our yoga practices and our communities and our gatherings and all of that. And now it's sort of like realizing like, oh, I didn't know the last time I did that, that was going to be the last time I did that. And most of the time we don't know with that, you know, we don't get the chance to sort of cherish that space. And that I'm finally starting to admit the loss of and the grief around that of being like, oh, this isn't going to feel the same for I don't know how long.
I'd like to say a huge thank you to everyone who contributed to the Transmission Times over the last 8 months. It's your voices and your stories that have documented this time for all of us. Thank you so much. In this episode, you've heard from Britta, Gemma, Tony, Laura, Vicky, another Laura, Catherine, Diane, Brian, a third Laura, Alicia, Duane, Rini, Imogen, Brianna, Christina, Sue, Jacinta, Erica, Kino, and the senior lady he interviewed, and Anna, whose voices are coming to you from all over the U.S., plus the U.K., New Zealand, and Romania. The sounds of the Ohio protest are from a video taken by Scott Shoemaker that he posted on Facebook Live. If you'd like to share your story, the Transmission Times Archive is still accepting submissions. Go ahead and record on your smartphone and email it to us at transmissiontimes@gmail.com or call 847-354-4163 and leave a voicemail. Thank you. The Transmission Times is created by me, Katie Semro.